Kind of you, I'm still waiting for my knighthood.
Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber, you're not yet. Yeah. That's your ultimate ambition, really, isn't it? To be a great songwriter. You're not interested in being a pop star, are you?
I'm interested in writing things that you could see when you walk out of this building on the street. And you said, oh, I was talking to Paddy McAloon. They wouldn't have to go, well, yes. Well, would I know any of his songs to get that stage where someone would know it automatically because it had entered into the sort of currency of the day?
It's kind of like Tony Hatch, you mean?
Sort of like Tony Hatch. Yes, a hip Tony Hatch.
A hip to, listen, there's
Tony
nothing,
hip.
There's nothing hipper than Tony Hatch.
No, well, yeah. I'm not so fond of neighbours.
Everybody needs good neighbours.
But I go along with the...
Don't sleep in the subway.
Yeah, or downtown, definitely. Yeah. I like those records.
So, have you written that song yet? I mean, Tony Hatch.
It's a good question. I don't think so. No, I think I've got things at home that we could, the Prefab Sprout can record, or hopefully other people will maybe want to record if I ever get around to doing any more really demo tapes of them. They've got to be simple without being insultingly simple. I mean, all of the great songs generally tend to be things that have some appeal on an emotional level to people, that you don't have to sort of have a book of footnotes mm-hmm. with you or sleeve notes when you listen to them, and you get into them on a sort of a personal, direct level. You don't have to be told about them. And I feel that too many of my things tend to be things that, I don't know, I just think that I've not been as direct as I could be.
Well, you think the lyrics are a bit remote and detached and clever.
Well, Cars and Girls, for example, which I really like, and I think it's a funny song. It's never going to move people in a way that sort of directly...
Anyone who had a heart.
Yeah, exactly. It's never going to move anyone like that. So you've got to aspire to move towards the anyone who had a heart league.
Mm. So do you think you're being too intellectual and not sensual enough?
I think I'm a different person now to the person who wrote a lot of the songs that I'm still proud of, but I'm a different person. And I felt at the time of things like Cars and Girls or Farron Young that there's a little space for me there in pop music. And sometimes that's all you need to help to get you to write a song. If you think no one else is covering that area, you do it. But then if you then get your heart set on doing something else, if your ambition changes and you want to move people, that's slightly different to seeing a space for what you do. So you've got to then change your approach, if you follow
me. To be less self-conscious as well. That's vital, isn't it?
Yeah, self-conscious. You know, I'll be honest with you, a lot of the things that are my most complicated songs, it wasn't so much that I was self-conscious, or I wasn't self-conscious. I would just thought it was fun in a different kind of way. That's all. Some of the things I did, I thought... If you'd said to me in 1984, do you like Anyone Who Had a Heart? I would have said, yes, I love it. And then you said to me, well, you've got a song like, Cruel or Cars and Girls or whatever. Mm-hmm. I would say, yes, that's just slightly different to Anyone Who Had a Heart. And that's the point of it, that someone who liked Burt Bacharach wouldn't hear those things and think, oh, well, yeah, you've not written it as well as Burt Bacharach. They would think, you've written something different, mm-hmm. and so you should have done. And to me, then, being different was really the goal.
There are songs that sound like they were written, and there were songs that sound like they were meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you written any songs that sound like they were meant to be?
That they were meant to be? Mm-hmm. I don't think so, no. I honestly don't think so. I wish I had. I mean, there's nothing... The big mystery of all this is it generally tends to be in the melody side of a record when you hear the tune for the first time and you think, that couldn't have gone anywhere else. That melody just had to fall in that line.
Like Yesterday or something. Like
yeah, exactly. It just sounds complete and whole.
Mm. And there's a symmetry about it, isn't there?
Precisely. It just couldn't be another shape. It's a symmetry. Now, that... You can be damn sure that it's... Well, Paul McCartney would say, well, that fell out of him. But other people who've written those kind of tunes, they've often worked at them. Mm-hmm. They've worked at them to get... So you can craft it. It's just... You sort of... The brilliant thing is, people who don't know anything about music spot it before, I think, for people who are supposedly clever at music or knowledgeable. The mythical man in the street knows when he hears an inevitable melody, I think.
you say you don't think you've written that song yet. I mean, plenty of time still to do that. The lyric is interesting because I know you must, as a songwriter, any ambitious songwriter would want to have their song sung by the very best people, you know, like Streisand or Sinatra or whatever. But if you take a song like Nancy, Let Your Hair Down, it's a wonderful song, great tune, but the lyric is somewhat
it's
left field, isn't it?
It is, it's off-centre. The problem, I'll tell you the problem with that lyric is that as I wrote some of those songs on Langley Part of Memphis, I wanted to have an accompanying video that would sort of spell out the bits that weren't in the lyric. And on that song, I wanted it to be a guy leaving home in the morning that you didn't see who his wife was as he kissed her at the door. You got some sort of domestic scene, and he kissed her goodbye, and then he's driving to work with a woman in the front of the car. And the whole idea was that there's a guy who's married to his boss. It sounds really silly in the telling. It's a bit like My Girl Bill. Do you remember that? It's a little bit...
My Girl Bill.
Perhaps too close to that. But that was the idea. Now, that's left out of the song and maybe spoils its coverability.
Yeah.
Because I'm really proud of the tune of that.
Exactly. I mean, that's one that you could imagine somebody like Streisand doing or whoever.
Yes. Well, I like to sometimes. It's a good point, that the idea of someone singing your song inspires
you. But then you've got
to
compromise, haven't you? You've got to compromise those great ideas you've got in your head for those lyrics, those wonderful video images, and you've got to maybe make it more prosaic.
You've either got to make it... you've got to find an image to start with or a theme to start with that doesn't need the spelling out. That's what it is. It's what you say. It's like you've... now I'm more conscious of that. As I sit at home now and I write things, I won't settle for something that I know is a cute idea or something that I can explain to you in a conversation before you play the record. I'll try and think, does this... as it will come out of the speakers, have all the information you need to think, oh, yeah, that's, you know, from the heart, and I've got the full picture.
It's another songwriter. Jim Webb, for example, because I interviewed Richard Harris once on this show, and, you know, he wrote all the Richard Harris stuff when Richard Harris was a pop star and an actor.
Yes.
But Richard Harris told me the story of Didn't We? You know, the song.
Tell me about this.
He sat down, his first marriage had just broken up. He sat down at a piano with Jim Webb, and Jim Webb said, "How do you feel?" And he told him how he felt, and the two of them were sat at the stool, and Jim Webb wrote the song in 10 minutes. And that's exactly what you're saying. You know, relating how you feel and immediately translating it to music. Isn't that wonderful?
That is brilliant. I met him last year, you know.
Jim Webb.
And sang with him.
Wow.
In Ireland. He was, this is really strange. I'd been asked to sing a couple of songs for a radio televisiere and some television programme that they were doing, and it was contemporary songwriters doing the songs in an unusual setting. So they said, "We just want you and we'll have an orchestra, and if you could give us a couple of your songs, we'll sort of provide some background." And I thought, oh, I'm not sure about this. I said, "Well, who have you got doing it?" And they said, "Well, we have Jimmy Webb." And as a joke, I said, "Well, I'll do it if I can be on the same programme as him." And then thinking that they would sort of say, "No, you can't do that." And they said, "Yes, but would you do a duet with him?" And I thought, this is outrageous. I said, "What have you got in mind?" And they said, "Well, The Highwaymen. Do you know that song? It's from one of his solo albums." And to cut a long story short, I did it and got to speak to him. And he's extremely modest.
He's not the greatest singer though, is he?
Well, I think he's very good. I think he has a reputation. From when he first appeared, he had this reputation of being unsure of himself. And that because he'd heard Sinatra do his things, and because Glen Campbell has, you know, he has a fine voice, these people who covered his songs were so strong. Even Richard Harris, where it's idiosyncratic and you kind of swept along it. Jimmy Webb's got, in the flesh, quite a gospel-y voice. He just sits back and it's very soulful. Really, really soulful. But it's never happened for him in that particular way.
But it's happened for him in a way that I'm sure you'd aspire to. He's made it as a songwriter. He's written so many wonderful songs.
Really funny, because I've read so much about him wanting to make it on the level of his contemporaries. So that he was like a millionaire at 20 or 21 with Up, Up and Away, MacArthur Park, Galveston, Wichita Lyman.
Yeah.
But he felt that he was too much in the... the Vegas bracket, and all his pals were singing about the Vietnam War, and he wanted to be a rock star, and I sort of would aspire to be more like Jimmy Webb. Just to write songs.
But to write a lyric like, I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time, and the Wichita lineman, because it's so inspiring, it's so enigmatic for people in this country. It's like another planet, the Wichita lineman. What's that?
That's the most romantic line I think I've ever heard. I need you more than want you. That's the one line in that song when I was 11. And I remember I was at school and we were having to do a cross-country run. And I was never any good at that. And I came in the door and I heard that song and I knew nothing about music. You know, no, didn't play anything. No one had ever taught me anything. And that line hit me as the most romantic thing I've ever heard. And I still feel like that about it. I need you more than want you.
And talking about lyrics and great lyrics, you were mentioning the lyric in Wichita Lineman. I mean, there are, in specific songs or single lines. I mean, there's a song, Lou Reed's song called Perfect Day. Do you know it?
Yes, I do.
Where it
well.
Says, you made me forget myself. I thought I was someone else, someone good.
Or someone good, that's
someone
right.
Someone good, yeah. Isn't that one great?
That's beautiful, yeah. And a good tune as well. I mean, he's not really famed for writing pretty melodies, but that's probably one of his best.
Yeah, well, When Love Breaks Down was your hit, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's as close as I've got, really, to writing something that's sort of inevitable, tune-wise. Maybe I feel like that because it kind of came in one piece.
I was going to say that when I was talking about songs that write themselves. It was the one that did occur to me, yeah.
I sat down, and it's funny because although it's sort of, it's quite a pure song in the sense that anyone listening to it would probably think, oh, that's very heartfelt. I was conscious at the time of, I'd better write a hit. I had that in mind. I thought...
Some Pine Alley stuff.
Yeah. I sat down and thought, oh, this is all very... You know, Swoon had just come out. And really, the writing on Swoon was like years and years behind what I was actually into as a writer. And Swoon was out, and I was kind of getting reviewed on the strengths of a past approach.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, people don't really know what I'm into now. And I thought, the key to this is a bit of simplicity and writing something extremely simple, and I hit this D-flat chord, and it sort of wrote itself from there. But that hasn't happened to me very often.
Is that when the muse really strikes you? What's the feeling? Is it just...
That's so hard to describe when you've kind of got to cheat yourself, otherwise you do get self-conscious. You sit there and think, well, I'll hit a few notes and I'll hit a few chords. Oops, that's been done before. Mm-hmm. Or that's leading us nowhere. Or you think...
That's too obvious.
Or someone's been here before. Or sometimes you get swept along on your admiration for other people. And it's not that you write what they've done, but if you've got, for example, in your mind, the entire recorded output of Paul McCartney whizzing around your head as you try to find a couple of chords, it just makes you not want to start.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to cheat myself and just play a few things that I like.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you fall into the rhythm of something, and before you know it, you catch yourself having written maybe just a few bars that will do as a chorus.
Yeah.
And then that gives you the inspiration to write the next bit.
It's fascinating for me to hear this because I'm somebody who's a, you know, I'm a limited pianist. I can read chords in a book. I've got all the sort of, you know, complete... I'm sure a lot of people are like this with guitars.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at my level, you've got the complete Beatles or whatever, or Rodgers and Hart's tune book, and you go through it, and, you know, very slowly and ponderously, but you marvel at the chord
how
changes.
How they've done it, yeah. How they make even simple chord changes really fresh, like Rodgers and Hart or Rodgers and Hammerstein. You look at the music, and... he's sometimes using, I mean, I would never describe them as simple chords, but he squeezes out of them melodies that you think that it shouldn't be allowed to happen, and to write so many of them for one person. But that's like, that is a sort of another level of being gifted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who are good and they write good things, but then there are truly gifted people, you know. And that Richard Rodgers was just one of them. And apparently he was very businesslike. You know, that he was more like an investment banker. He dressed like one, and he would literally write something in a cab, like the tune to Some Enchanted Evening. It would just come to him, and there would be no big, you know, sort of heartfelt moment where, oh, yes, I'm really proud of that. It was just something he could do.
Yeah, it's so romantic, that song, isn't it? Have you heard the Sinatra version?
No, I haven't. Oh, Some Enchanted Evening. No,
yeah,
I've not
really
heard
wonderful.
That.
Yeah, really wonderful.
I can imagine.
It's not a great lyric, isn't it? Some Enchanted, you may see a stranger.
Across a crowded room. It's very simple
and
again.
Somehow
you know
you've known all along. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. McAloon is with me, one of the great contemporary British songwriters. I'm always going on about it, you know, people who actually are holding the torch at the moment, because it seems to be dwindling a bit.
Yeah, I've got to be careful, because you sound like, I'd sound like a fogey if I go on, well, the old songs were always the best. You know, you kind of, yes, and in my day, we'd sit around and have cold porter evenings. But, well, yeah, it's just that if you get into the habit of, I'm just starstruck. When it comes to melodies, I'm obsessed with how people do it, and I want to emulate it. That's it, basically. And if you set off down that track and then think, well, you've got an opportunity, it's the 90s, you could write maybe a different kind of lyric to the thing that they used in the 50s or 60s. So I try to be modern. Once you get into that, you don't really have too much time to think, well, should I be trying to make contemporary dance music? It's sort of, you sort of ignore the things that might be good for your career, in inverted commas, and you're off on your own private little trail, and I'm one of those people.
But it's wonderful to be influenced by Jim Webb and Prince at the same time, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I have my ears to the new things that are good, that are great. But to me, it's like if you hear some of these old, that they are now getting on a bit, you know, the older characters, they may have aged, but the sort of standard of excellence hasn't changed. Just because Jimmy Webb's, you know, a bit older and Richard Rodgers is dead now, doesn't mean that you can go, oh, well, there's someone who's on the cover of New Musical Express this week.
But we need people like you, without sort of being obsequious or anything, but we need people like you and, you know, Ricky Ross and Gary Clark, who used to be in Danny Wilson, right. and you know, all these people. They're very, very important, because it's very easy to make music without being musical now, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. It is. And it's very easy to know that there's an audience out there that has a sort of different set of requirements, that they are happy just to leap around to something without thinking too much about it. And that's okay, just that it would be a real crime if the other side of it died out, where you heard something that was that relies a bit on an appreciation of words.
Well, there is, yes, exactly. But there is a huge audience who would lap up great songs and do lap up great songs. And I was having my haircut the other day in this, you know, so-called trendy hairdressers in Camden Town, and they had the house music on. Then one of them went and changed the tape, and it was Nat King Cole's 20 Greatest.
Yeah.
I know that was perceived as trendy.
Oh, well, that's great, you know. That's brilliant.
Jordan, the comeback album, was pretty full of songs, wasn't it?
Yes, that was an orgy, really.
Orgiastic.
I just thought, if I never get to make another record, I have to sort of have it at least on one bit of plastic. So if someone were to say to me in later life, what did you do, or what have you done? I could say, well, that's what I tried to do. And that's what it's for, really.
When you notice, when you listen to albums like that, you notice it's not just thrown together, is it? I mean, the order of the songs is very important.
Yes.
It's almost kind of symphonic idea, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I've maybe laboured that too much in the past, because I've wanted people to, I've tried to give people as much help as I can with our records. I've taken it to heart when people have said, oh, you're difficult, or, you know, you've got to hear this 3 or 4 times. I've kind of overdosed on that approach. So then I start to explain everything I did. But that LP, as there are 19 songs, I thought it best to order them in some way, so that the songs that were remotely about Elvis Presley were together, and the songs that were more spiritual and things that were, you know, about God or about dying, they were all together on another section.
Do you like being very confessional in songs? I mean, you mentioned God and Elvis, and I immediately just then thought John Lennon. You know, John Lennon said, I don't believe in God, I don't believe in Elvis. And all
that's
that.
Right. I just believe in Yoko.
You believe in God, though, don't you?
I think I believe in God, right? I sometimes wonder whether it matters, whether anybody, if anyone says they believe in God. I don't know how much it matters. It's more, if there is a God, whether he believes in you, it would be more appropriate, really. I'm very, very confused on that subject, but I can write from the point of view of someone who believes intensely, just as I can write. I think I'm good.
You're once a Catholic, as they say.
Well, that's right.
That religious little
that it's
bit.
It's always there, and the vocabulary I use, it's just littered. If that's probably
litany
would be a better litanied with Catholic references. I just can't lose that. So I was joking with some colleagues the other day that the songs I write usually start off quite personal, but by the third verse, God has made his appearance. Almost in all of them. And it happens every time. I must have some little thing inside me that the mix-up. So, I mean, in the Sound of Crying,
Sound
God
of
appears
crying.
There.
Yeah.
Nightingales, God's a proud thundercloud. That happens. It's always in the same kind of place. I'm trying to stop it now, otherwise it'll just become like a little daft gesture. But it's a fascinating subject.
References to Elvis.
Oh, yes.
As well, literature. It's interesting, actually, when I read in an interview that you far prefer the later degenerate, corpulent...
In a way, I do,
Elvis,
yeah.
To the traditional one that most people say, oh, I liked him when he was lean and hungry and in leather.
The Sun Sessions, yeah. I mean, I like that stuff as well, but I kind of like the... I mean, it's maybe...
Belly bursting through rhinestone suits and all that.
I like the voyeuristic thing of seeing a guy who... He's trying to choose songs, it seems to me, that reflect something of his personal life. So, you know, My Boy, that the song, it's sort of very over the top, but I think it was at the time he's splitting up with his wife and, you know, there must have been problems of seeing his daughter. And I just think that there's a lot more personality involved in it than the little caricature that's drawn of Elvis as being, oh, in this Vegas period, he was no good, you know? And even the Tony Joe White covers that he did, you know,
yeah.
Puck Saladani and things like that. I think there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. Did you see the film? It was on recently. I mean, you must have seen Elvis on tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's...
He was treated as a god, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
You know, backstage, there was a lot of licking going on.
The guys with him. Yeah. That's serious, isn't it?
I mean, is that one of the reasons you don't want to really be a famous pop star?
I think that, you know, playing live, the lovely side of it is you see people who love what you do and you can't fail to be moved. Like, when you play something and say you like something, I can see that you love it. And it got to make you feel good. But all the time, if you're in front of an audience and the applause is there for everything, the problem is coming down from it or writing another song. I mean, Elvis didn't write songs, so there's not... Well, he had problems enough as it is. But he never had to go home and think, well, they loved...
He never came down from it.
But he never came down from it, no. Mm. And I think that's the big, big worry, because it's just so easy, and especially if the touring is accompanied by massive record sales.
Yeah.
Who's ever going to encourage you to come down?
Well, I know what it's like doing the Radio 1 Roadshow for a week. I'm a loony at the end of that. Never mind that sort of tiny, minuscule scale. Never mind 50 weeks a year or whatever, with nobody to boot your backside.
No.
You know.
And I think your sense of morality would go as well, because you're moving from place to place, and nothing really matters, because even if you behave disgracefully in one hotel... somewhere. Next week you're somewhere else.
You know about the roadshow last year then, do you?
that's right. Yes, the controller asked me to have a word with you.
Yeah, I know what you mean though.
But because you kind of, it's not like you're going home to the wife and kids who are going to say, you know, hey, you can't do that. You know, you're somewhere else and people will sort of mop up after you.
Yeah. Sondheim, is he a musician that you've...
He's a hero, yeah. He's a god.
What is it about him? He's can be very odd and atonal, isn't he?
Well, I think that he's... I like him for so many different reasons. I like him because he's never, ever ducked a challenge. And he's working in a field where he must know that he could take the easy way out and write a few extremely sentimental tunes. He could do a few parodies of some of the people he worked with. I'm sure he could parody, you know, Richard Rodgers and write a suitably sentimental lyric and make a lot of money. But I think that he's just... There's something that what he does... to me, it's almost like rock music. In that if you sort of accept that rock writers are trying to do something out of the ordinary or trying to challenge the traditional way of things, he does that within the musical. And I'm sort of... I mean, I'm lost in admiration because he wrote the lyrics to West Side Story when he was 25.
Oh,
that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Alone, you know.
Yeah.
But, and I also like the fact that he seems a very complex, and I don't know.
Just writes lyrics, sometimes just writes music, sometimes writes both as well.
He prefers to write them both, but he's done jobs in the past when he's been sort of begged to do it, where he's written the lyrics. Mm. But he wants to be a composer, or I shouldn't say wants to be, he is a composer.
He can do all that real showbiz stuff, like a career from career to career.
That's great from Follies, I love that.
Yeah.
I just love what he does.
Anything in particular that I can play?
Okay, I really, really adore a song from A Little Night Music called Every Day a Little Death. It lasts 2.5 minutes. I think it's a song about saying that love is absolutely disgusting and vile. Ah, well, let's get on with it.
Every day a little death.
Paddy McAloon with me tonight. Of course, being a songwriter, being somebody who creates all the time, you're constantly on the lookout for things to write about. And I know that you can write about odd things, and odd things can inspire you.
Yeah.
But it is important, and it's not just because there's nothing else to write about. It is important to write about love, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a feeling that, you know, most love songs, that the subject isn't just about love. It's about wanting to reach for something else. I think that's sort of... I see that as the justification for me writing a lot of love lyrics. I think it goes deeper than, you know, having love somewhere in the title. I think it's sort of just a constant thing in people's lives, that they're yearning for something. It's like a romantic impulse to want to be in a better situation or to long for something more. And a love song is almost a convention that you use to express that longing. Yeah. At least that I've thought about that a lot recently, because, you know, obviously some people say to me, oh, you write a lot of love songs, or you seem, you know, very romantic. But I think it sort of expresses you
an inner striving spiritual. And something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost spiritual.
Yeah. And it's interesting talking about the songs that you were, that Elvis did, that said much about Elvis. You know, I was thinking the other day about the Beatles wrote some great love songs, mm-hmm. but nothing that is genuinely moving in the 60s, I was thinking. It's all very professional, their songwriting with love. So the more interesting stuff, which I thought was, you know, psychedelic stuff, their rock stuff they were mm-hmm. more into. Maybe that was something to do with the lifestyle they were leading. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I sort of split what they do up into different sections. Like, the early stuff, it seems to me just... When I hear it, I mean, like, things like She Loves You, yeah.
But it's not a love song, is it?
It's not a love song. It
doesn't have that striving in it.
No, it doesn't have that longing. It's more to do with... It sounds like this is the sound of 19 or 20-year-olds with more energy than anyone's ever had. It's that sort of that Elvis Presley, early Elvis Presley, of just... it's electricity. Mm-hmm. And what they're singing about almost doesn't matter. It's what they needed to sing about, I suppose, for young girls. But it's just energy, whereas later on...
Well, I'm talking about, it wasn't personal later on. It was more third person, wasn't it? You know, she wakes up, she makes up, she takes the time and doesn't spy on or is there anybody going to listen to my story? And all, you know,
that's a bit professional, I would agree.
You know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to say.
It's sort of, I mean, it's funny, I remember reading... Do you remember Roy Carr and Charlie Murray's book on the Beatles? Like, it's called An Illustrated
Record. Oh, it had all the album covers in it and stuff like that, yeah.
And they did a sort of review of... I mean, I think it's a brilliant book.
It was, yeah.
And paperback writer Charlie Murray said something like, very good, but it's almost as a suspicion that they're being professional songwriters. Yeah. And at the time, when I first read that, I didn't really see it, but now I can see that it sounds like, they've chosen a good subject, you know, the sort of... playing on the guy who's sort of writing to a publisher and he wants to be a writer, and the song is about someone who wants to be a writer. It is clever. It's a clever song.
It was McCartney's quote, wasn't it? Let's ride a swimming pool.
And maybe that entered into it, but I sort of think that anything that they did, when you talk about that, to me at least, it's a kind of an exceptional world that it's hard to relate to, because it was, if ever there was genius, I think, you know, it was there.
Give us a Beatles song that did grab you.
Oh, God.
Because we're talking about songs and songwriters.
A Beatles song that grabbed me. You see, you sort of mentioned the name of one of them. It's almost, you're almost in cliche land, aren't you? I feel like I can't...
It's part of the furniture, isn't it?
It's part of the furniture.
Lennon?
Oh, God, John Lennon. I'll tell you that I love, and it's I like it because it has all the virtues of that you traditionally associate with McCartney, and that's If I Fell... Mm-hmm. Which I think is a Lennon tune. If I Fell in Love, and those chord changes, I love that.
Paddy, it's been fascinating tonight talking about a subject that will forever fascinate me, and I know you like talking about it.
I do, yeah.
It's songs an
absolute,
and songwriting.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, and this is the current collection for you, which is going to bring those royalties rolling in, and Streisand will be doing them, and Sinatra will be doing them, Neil Diamond will be covering it.
I'll be papering the walls with my PRS statement.
Yeah. Hey Manhattan, tell us about that one, your New York song.
Yeah, I've got to confess that I was bounced into that song by the melody. I couldn't find a good lyric for the opening line of the chorus, the dum 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 dum. And I thought, I got Hey Manhattan from just out of the air as I was singing along. And I thought, this isn't the kind of thing I would normally write, because I'm very conscious of sort of where I come from, you know, and being a Newcastle-born person. I thought, well, the best way to approach songs is to not let that get in the way. View them a bit like a script, so that they exist on paper and you could get other people to do them, you know, so that the words, as long as the words are true, if you found the right person to sing it, you'd be aware. Hey Manhattan, I always felt slightly unhappy with that. I was writing about New York, about how if you were very young and you were optimistic, it would seem the best place in the world. Or if you had nothing at all, it would seem like every dream you could possibly have that isn't going to come true for you. But I always felt slightly defensive. This is what all this preamble is about, that I had to sing it myself. And I wanted to get Isaac Hayes in to do it. And we got very close, but I didn't get to meet him.
That would have been interesting.
But it would have been, yeah, just to make the song more like, to cast the song, rather. That's what I wanted to do, cast it with different singers. But in the end, I did it myself, you know.
Well, Paddy, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
Paddy McAleer.